Welcome to the Execution Zone podcast, where we tackle the challenge of why executing strategy is so much harder than actually creating it. We talk openly and honestly with entrepreneurs and leaders who will share the behind-the-scenes story of their own journey. This will give you the insights that you need to shortcut your own path to success. In this episode, we speak to the amazing Kate Sage, CEO and co-founder of Be Fit Food. We hear from Kate how she managed 1,500% growth overnight after appearing on Shark Tank. We hear what her lessons are that she's learned from having Janine Ellis as an investor in her business. We also learn how she's handled criticism on social media. We hear how she stepped up into her leadership role, how she's navigated growth, and how she plays a high performance game. This episode is absolutely brilliant. Kate was so open in sharing her journey and being really, really honest with the times that have been very, very difficult, her learnings from those experiences, and so much more. Welcome to this week's podcast. We have got the amazing Kate Sage with us. I am particularly excited to have Kate, CEO and co-founder of Be Fit Food, because I've had the pleasure of working with her and really seeing that she does walk her talk, practices what she preaches, and is a force to be reckoned with. Kate, before I get into our conversation, I just want to share with our audience a little bit about your background and how you came to be where you are.
Sure.
So by way of introduction, Kate is CEO and co-founder of Be Fit Food, as I mentioned, which she started in 2015. Kate is an accredited practicing dietitian, exercise physiologist, and diabetes educator, has a double degree in nutrition, dietetics, and exercise science, and completed her master's in clinical exercise physiology. After starting Be Fit Food in 2015, went on to open their first kitchen in 2016 and then first retail outlet. In 2017, Kate appeared on Shark Tank and did an amazing job, which we'll dig into, and got the incredible Janine Ellis as an investor. Following that, they went on in 2018 to become Telstra Victorian Business of the Year. Outside of all of that, Kate is also director of Peninsula Physical Health and Nutrition, which has 10 locations across Mornington Peninsula. As if that wasn't enough, Kate is also a mum of two beautiful girls, has been doing an MBA, is a fitness enthusiast, and the list goes on and on. That is quite the bio, Kate. I actually needed a list because there was that much there. So look, I want to start out by just understanding a little bit about the background to Be Fit Food, how it came to be. A lot of us have great ideas. A lot of us have inspiration to go and do something, but very few of us actually do something with it. So I'd love to understand a bit of the backstory and how you went to go about actually executing on your idea.
Yeah, so I guess I worked as a dietitian for over 10 years before I started Be Fit Food, and it became really apparent to me that I guess I was writing all these meal plans and setting people up to have to go shopping, prepare the food, not eat the leftovers, you know, portion control, and do all of these things that even myself I would find really difficult. I know that when I cook, I generally cook for 10 people, even though there's only four of us at home. And going back for that second bowl or whatever it is becomes a habit. And that's something that people really struggle with when they're going on that weight loss journey. It's the portion control. And it might be the right foods intentionally, but sometimes they're just, it's the leftovers, it's the temptation to eat what's left on the plate from your kids or whatever else, and anything else that's in the pantry or the fridge that you didn't put there and you don't want to be eating, but you're tempted by. So I decided at that point, okay, well, what would, I guess with the help of a weight loss surgeon, what would this perfect weight loss diet look like? So a diet that would help people with their health conditions. So with weight loss being an outcome of just really, really good eating, the diet itself is, it has to change someone's health. Otherwise, there's no point losing weight if it doesn't improve your health in some way, shape or form. So to me, it needed to improve their cholesterol, their blood pressure, their blood sugar levels, their energy levels. And I wanted people to feel good eating it. And you know yourself, when you eat a really good meal, you feel satisfied, but you feel good about yourself for eating it. And that was the sort of food I wanted to create. And I knew if I could create that, the side effect would actually be rapid weight loss, because the body lets go of the weight that it doesn't need if you're eating the right foods. And yes, there's calorie restriction, but people were following meal plans and trying to restrict anyway. And I saw from the weight loss surgery industry that they were all using bars and shakes as their weight loss solution. And that was something I really didn't agree with, because it's all synthetic ingredients. And let's face it, it's powder that you're mixing with water and drinking. Now, that does not resemble the five food groups. It doesn't resemble the colourful plate that we really want people to be eating. And certainly as a role model and as a mum, I wouldn't have that sort of stuff in front of my kids, because I just don't believe that's good role modeling or anything. And then once, I guess over the years, the microbiome and gut health became really topical. We know that it's actually the plant-based foods and the colourful fruits and veggies and the fibre that's so important for gut health. And it made me question this bars and shakes diet, regardless of the fact that they were getting these rapid weight loss and they were shrinking the liver and they were changing health. What was the long-term health repercussions? With weight loss surgery, if people are having weight loss surgery, then I guess they were going to lose weight through the surgery process. So I thought, why don't we start these people out on a real food diet using all of the things that we would want them to be eating, whether they had surgery or not? So really the low carb, low starch veggies and as many colours as you can, and as much variety as you can, and then the right amounts of protein and some healthy fats and small amounts of carbs, so 1 to 2 tablespoons at a mealtime. And the surgeon agreed with me that this is a great idea, so let's get them off bars and shakes and let's give them these meals. And I said, but I haven't cooked the meals, I've only got recipes. And he said, well, you can try that, but you know what's going to happen. The same thing that always happens. They get sick of cooking, or they swap substitute ingredients, or they go out and they go, well, I'm just going to have what you told me to have, that chicken stir fry, but I'm at the Chinese restaurant and it's full of MSG and sticky sauce and, the sweetness and all of that that they shouldn't be eating. So he said, you're going to have to make the food. And I was like, oh, that's tricky. I'm like, I was about 8 months pregnant at the time. No, I'd just given birth to my second child. So my second child was actually 6 weeks old. I knew it was a tricky time, and that's why. I obviously wasn't sleeping a lot when the second child was 6 weeks old either. And I thought, how are we going to do this? So I hired a kitchen and some staff, and we started cooking. And what we found is, as people started going on the program and eating the food, not only were they enjoying eating like that, but they were getting this rapid weight loss and they were telling their friends. So we thought we were really creating a product for people before they have weight loss surgery, so they could learn how to eat well. And what it turned out was, it was actually a rest of life or a without surgery solution for losing weight and then healthy eating education as well. And yeah, that's when it all started. And I think it really just started with the recipes and then looking up where can I hire a kitchen and putting an ad up on Seek, asking people in my network who knows a chef. And that's how it all came about, and some kitchen hands. And eventually we got kicked out of the shared kitchen space because we took out too much space. We bought a fish and chip shop for $1, and that was one of my friends as well, my friend's boyfriend at the time. He goes, I can find you a kitchen. And anyway, we see this absolute dump of a shop in Somerville, and he's like, don't worry about how it looks, it's got 3 cool rooms in it, extractor fans, everything you need, and they only want 10 grand for it. He was a really good negotiator. We paid $1. We got it for $1.
$1. Okay, $1. You need to explain that element of the story. How did you get it for $1?
Oh, he just went in there, and he had lots of restaurants and bars, and he worked in hospitality his whole life. He's like, this is no good, this needs repairing, this doesn't work, this is not worth the money you've put on it. And that was it. So we took over the keys and we started fixing it up. And he said, don't worry about how it looks, because we're blacking out the windows. It's only a kitchen. No one will ever see it. And it's in a suburb where you wouldn't sell the food. That we didn't think that we had a demographic or that we had the interest in that suburb anyway. And sure enough, within a couple of weeks, people in this local area, and some of them could smell the food, they were knocking on the door. They said, we want to buy food. And the chefs in the kitchen would say, no, you can only order online. And they're like, can't you just give us the food? Can't we buy it? We're ready to buy. And I thought, this is interesting. So they're not weight loss surgery patients. They're not necessarily there for massive weight loss. They're just smelling good food and they want some healthy food. So that even opened up our market again. And eventually we built out this tiny little shop that was the size of a wardrobe at the front of the kitchen, because the chefs threatened if they had to walk to the door again and stop cooking, they were all going to leave because they couldn't get their jobs done. So that's how the first shop came to be. And when that shop started doing really well and we couldn't actually fit all the customers in the door, we decided to get a bigger shop and a warehouse so we could have, you know, hold some more food and have our container there and all those bits and pieces. And we hired our first other employee outside of the kitchen, and she was a dietitian and she ran the shop and she ran the whole kit and caboodle with me and the people in the kitchen. And it wasn't long after that I thought, oh, you know, this has legs and it has potential, but I don't know, as a clinician and someone who's only worked in the health service area, how to really market a product and how to sell a product other than in a face-to-face consultation. I'd be writing meal plans and I'd be too scared to recommend my own product because I felt that that was, you know, unethical. And so I wouldn't tell them that I had this food company, and I'd write the recipes out and everything else. And every now and then people would come back up and they go, I've seen this company, BeFit Food, or is this you, or what is this? And I'd go, oh yeah, it is. Well, why didn't you tell me about it? And so then I started sort of mentioning it every now and then, or I'd have a brochure there, but I felt so conflicted telling people to buy something that I was making. So I quit my job. I stopped, you know, practicing face-to-face or one-on-one as a dietitian, because I didn't want to be telling people to buy something from me when they've come for a service. So then I thought, okay, how do I sell the food now that I don't have clients or customers coming in face-to-face? And sure enough, the shop and some signage and, you know, building a bit of a brand, that all came to fruition, but it wasn't enough to sustain the kitchen and all the staff. And I thought, we need investment. So we'd put, literally at this point, myself and my business partner, the bariatric surgeon, hundreds of thousands of dollars into the business, and we weren't seeing anything come back. In actual fact, every meal that we sold cost us money. So I saw the bigger the business was going to grow, the more money we were going to lose. So at that point, I thought, the only way I can see us getting the money, the banks aren't going to loan it, is to find an investor. And I knew nothing about investment. So I thought, oh, to get an investor, you go on Shark Tank. So that's what I did. I applied for Shark Tank. And I knew from the get-go that it was Janine Ellis that I was wanting to get some advice in the business, knowing her background and her history, and particularly in food. And I literally went onto the show thinking, if I could come out of this with any amount of investment, it wouldn't matter whether it was $1 or $1 million from Janine Ellis. It was her advice and her mentoring that I really needed, because I just, apart from the concept and what I was selling and the why, I didn't know the how. So I watched every episode of Shark Tank ever made for 3 months over here and overseas, and I took notes, and every question I made sure I could answer about my business. I wrote down all of everything I needed to know about the financials, because I noticed in the other episodes when they really stumped people, it always was on the financials. My business partner at the time said there's no way he was going on the show, because they tend to want to tear apart professionals, particularly doctors or lawyers or anyone with a, you know, high credibility, and it makes good TV. So he said, no, you'll have to go on your own. I thought, yep, I can do this. And unlike what you see, I guess, on the TV where it's 5 minutes, it was actually 2 hours and 45 minutes, where you walk through the big doors, you stand on the red carpet, and you've got five people absolutely hammering questions at you. You've got no breaks, no thinking time, no, can I look that up? You just need to know it. And at the same time, you're being filmed on national TV, so they can use any part of that they want. So you're trying to be very careful about what you say, and, you know, you give the right answers, not rub your nose, or, you know, pick out a wedgie, or whatever you felt like doing in 2 hours and 45 minutes that wasn't standing still in high heels and a yellow dress. So we got through, and Jeff Draper ended up coming out for the last couple of minutes, and so they could meet him, and we took the deal, and we actually had Steve Baxter and Janine sort of battling for us, which was amazing because he had the tech background. And at the time, I didn't realize how important tech was in business. And now I'm like, wow, tech is such a big part of an online business, but you don't know what you don't know. And I mean, I'm wrapped that we took Janine. I think it's great just having, you know, one mentor as well, because you could get, it could get confusing having too many opinions or whatever. But yeah, it was a fantastic opportunity. Yeah.
I love how you talk about the fact that you spent time going back over every single episode. And that was one of the things I actually wanted to ask you, was around how did you prep? Because having watched your Shark Tank episode, and anyone who hasn't seen it, go check it out. It is so impressive how you just absolutely know everything off the top of your head. You look cool, calm, collected. You've got it together. You know, there was none of those moments that you talked about where you were stumped and they got you. And actually, I think that's really interesting in terms of, you know, our focus around execution and how did you execute. You absolutely, by the sounds of it, you did your homework, you did the legwork, you were prepared for every single question that was going to come at you.
Yeah. And I think if you're running your own business, then you've got to make sure it's something you love, because if you don't love it, you don't have the will to keep learning. You don't have the will to keep pushing, keep developing. It's, you know, at the end of the day, money doesn't make anyone happy. So you can't be doing it for the money. You've got to be doing it with the passion and the love and whatever else it is we do it for, but it's definitely not the money, I can tell you that. And I think that is what made me want to learn everything about my business, and the questions I'd never asked myself and the things I didn't know, I wanted to find out, because I really wanted it to succeed, not for the money, but for the purpose and the greater good. And like your business, my business is to help other people to be able to live a healthier life, and your business is to help other people to execute and have amazing sales and do what you do well. So you're sharing your skill, and I wanted to share my skill.
And it's really interesting you talk about that, because I think a lot of people get sidetracked in the process, and actually it seems starting a business like a really exciting thing to do. And, you know, you see the Instagram version of running a business, and actually in reality, it's nothing like that.
No, nothing like that. And oh gosh, the number of times, like, I will always be the last person in the office on a Friday night, and you know, people talk about what they're doing on the weekend, and I'm like, Friday night is my favorite night to just stay back at work and get stuff done, because I know everyone else will leave and I have peace and quiet. My husband's got the kids, and it's my get stuff done time. And you know, it's different when it's your own business. There's things you have to get done.
So talk us through, you go on Shark Tank, you secure Janine as your mentor and as your investor, and then overnight you guys get absolutely off the charts growth. I believe it was 1,500% growth from 5 to 63 employees with a month. How do you execute and then deliver to that sort of overwhelming demand and just sheer growth? Can you talk us through that piece of the story?
Yeah, so I guess in preparation, we thought, okay, we filmed Shark Tank. It's going to go to air at some point, so let's be ready. And I guess the happiest part of it was we got the deal, and I thought naively again that we would get the money. We'd walk out with a big fat check at the end of filming, and that would be the deal. And that's obviously not the deal for anyone who's sort of read the media or whatever else. You go through a due diligence process. And now I really understand why, because a lot of people in business don't really understand what they're doing, or they make up numbers and make up figures, and you certainly wouldn't invest your money in unless you had that certainty it was going to come back. So that due diligence process actually went for a year, or nearly a year. So we didn't get the money or the investment, and we actually went to air about 10 or 11 months after it was filmed. So we didn't have the investment, we didn't have the mentoring, but we had this hope that we were going to get something out of it. And it, I mean, my biggest learning is never, ever give up. If you believe in something, just don't give up. Keep going at it. So month on month, Janine would tell me, no, no, no. And I'd be coming back, I'll see you next month. I'll see you next month. I have something new, and it's going to happen. And I, yeah, the day that she said yes, I was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. So it's getting that trust, backing yourself. And then when the TV episode went to air and we'd been told month on month it would happen, and because it never happened, that was, you know, kind of scary for us, because we thought, oh, nothing's going to change in this business if it doesn't go to air, and we might not get the investment. And so I prepared, hired a production manager and a head chef and people to sort of help in the kitchen should we have to scale the business. And, you know, we'd made sure everything in the business, even the recipes, were scalable should we need to do it. And I said, have a backup of, you know, 200, or I think I actually said 800 boxes of food at the time. And at that stage, we were probably selling about 30 boxes of food at the time, so about 1,000-ish meals. And I was saying, let's prepare, you know, 30,000 meals and have them ready. And really what happened that night, no one expected, is that we sort of went from having, you know, the first 20, 30, 50 people on the website, which we'd never had before all at once on Google Analytics, then hundreds, and then thousands, and then tens of thousands of people, and they're all hitting the shop button. So the website crashed every 4 minutes for the first couple of days and every hour thereafter, and it kept crashing and crashing. So tech issue number one. But also in that preparation phase, apart from getting the production manager, I'd also spoken to a friend who knew people at a call center, and I said, could you, you know, I want to set up just in case, like some extra phone lines. And then if our phone lines here kind of blow out, can they be forwarded to a call center? So I put in VoIP, you know, voice over IP, so that internet phone system. And it just meant that I could borrow 7 phones, but only pay for 1 line. And so we did that. And then we had the call center. And the next morning when we got in, we literally had hundreds of voicemail messages and all 7 phones ringing out. And I thought, I'll check with the call center if any have gone through to them and they've got any messages. And they said, well, their team in Victoria was overloaded with all the phone calls. So they opened it up to their national team, and they had 35 of their phone lines being blown out by all of our calls as well. So the next challenge there was the hundreds of messages we're getting every day to try and, you know, get back to customers. And I guess something else we couldn't predict, that the phones never stopped ringing, so you could never pick up the phone and actually make a phone call going out. So we couldn't return people's calls. We had loads of angry customers, and I apologize to anyone who's listening who may have called during that Shark Tank period, but there was me and my team of 5, and that was it. So the next 63 people, or the next 56 people, or whatever it is, that walked through the door basically got a job in that first 4 weeks, because we needed people to answer phones, pack boxes, help out in the kitchen, wash the dishes, print out the orders, do the deliveries, all of that sort of stuff. So it even got to that point where I guess we were using extra kitchens. I was lucky to have friends in the industry that had pubs and had extra kitchens and had extra staff that they could loan us out and just really help us. And the whole community came together. I had one of the guys who owns a Mazda dealership gave me a car, and I said, like a van to help with our deliveries and moving stock. And I said, oh, when do you need it back? Thinking he'd say next week. He's like, keep it for as long as you need it. And so we literally had one of his vans for months and months, and the whole community came to help out. And I think in terms of execution, you just needed to do what you needed to do. There were orders there. You needed to cook the food, process the order, get them out and delivered at some way, shape or form, and start to create systems. And I guess creating complex systems takes a lot of time, but when there's a sense of urgency, you need to create really simple systems just to get started. And needless to say, over that first 6 months, it was a fair disaster, and we had to really break the whole business and rebuild it from scratch because we needed complex systems. But you can't just stop and give up. You need to put those simple systems in place and then learn from them and, you know, write down all the failures and just make sure you don't make the same mistakes again. And then when you build new systems, build them without those problems in them.
Yeah, wow. That is incredible. And what I also love is how the community came together in that part of the story.
So good. Yeah, they're so good. And look at that, some of the problems that we faced every day, and this is where the generosity was and the helping. Like we would plug in one extra computer for someone who bought their own computer from home, because we clearly only had one computer and everyone else had to BYO a computer if they were going to work there. And we'd plug in a computer and the entire warehouse building power would go out because we'd overloaded the power with all these people and bits and pieces and these extra containers and storage, this and that. And then this one day we'd run out of all the storage everywhere at our kitchen, at the warehouses, at friends' warehouses. And I thought, I know what I'm going to do. We need to fit more frozen storage. I'm going to hire freezer trucks and I'm going to get someone with a truck license to drive over 8 trucks. So we got trucks driven over to the warehouse, and we used one of the electricians that was helping us at the time gave us his dad's license details, and he sort of said, yep, it's cool, yep, I'll be able to, you know, I'll go down as the person on, you know, on the paperwork for your yeah. trucks. And so that was all well and good, and I thought, well, we can't plug all these trucks in because once they stop driving, they're not going to stay cold anymore. So we just ran them on the diesel, but then the diesel ran out over the weekend. And so the trucks all stopped working, but we didn't have enough power coming through our warehouse to actually plug them in. So we had to get a second warehouse to plug in all these trucks and then find someone who had a truck license to drive them to the petrol station about a kilometre away, fill them all up again, and they're all running.
So how did you personally stay sane, quite frankly, and how did you cope? Because by this point, you've got two very, very young girls, business that is going off the charts and phones literally ringing off the hook. How did you personally navigate and deal with that?
I think I'm lucky in a sense that my cup is always half full. So I only ever see the positives in things. So when bad things happened, I would just focus on the positives because bad things were going to happen and they were happening 24/7. And I think the only thing that actually broke me and got me down and, you know, upset one day is I'd never really been much on social media, and ever since that happened, apparently I should have been checking my social media. And one of my girlfriends was really into socials, and she's like, oh, I'll go through it and this and that. And I opened up some stuff to have a look, and people had just torn through me in personal attacks and just horrible, horrible stuff, and particularly questioning my credentials, my integrity, and everything that the business stood for, and saying that I was selling out because I was no longer servicing as a dietitian. I was creating product and it was all a money-making scam and this and that. So it was really horrible, hurtful stuff. And from that day onwards, I just thought, I felt so low. I thought, I don't want to go to work today. Maybe I'm a fraud. Maybe this is not the right thing to do. And I felt awful. And there was probably 4 hours that I didn't go to work for, which is a long time when you're working 20 hours a day, basically. So people are like, oh, where's Kate? And my best friend said to me, just don't look anymore. And she took over all my accounts and I just didn't use social media. I didn't look. And funny enough, one of the girls who was a part of this sort of attack on a private dietitian group, other dietitians in my business were watching, and they were watching what they were posting, and other people were jumping on board, and they were kind of sticking up for me. And I thought, you know what, I always see the good in everything. I'm like, she's a human being behind this keyboard, and I'm going to contact her and I'm going to find out what her problem is and let her know that this is everything she said about me is actually not true. So I did that. I called her on it and she answered her phone, and I told her how exactly what it had done to me, and that it had absolutely destroyed me emotionally. And all I was trying to do was get a product out there that I believed in, that was high in veggies and, you know, the right amount of protein and healthy fats and portion controlled. What was so wrong with that? And she actually broke down on the phone crying too. And she said, she's so sorry. And she actually said, oh, you know, I want to come and visit you. And I said, I've got young kids and, you know, I'd never want them to be bullied. Like I feel like I've been bullied and this and that. And she, crying, apologized. And we never ended up catching up, but I just thought, I'm glad I put that to rest because it just wasn't fair. And she actually said, she goes, oh, I forgot that you were like a real person behind this. And that's what I think for all the poor celebrities out there that get harassed over the smallest things, like, oh, your knickers flashed when you got out of a car, or what, things that are actually completely out of your control, and people are like, did you see the cellulite? Or, you know, they really pick on them. And it's like, everyone has cellulite. Why are you picking on this person? Why are you tearing them to shreds when that's, it's just not nice to do? They're a real person too.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because now with obviously social media being so prevalent, it's becoming more and more of a thing that's now happening, and it's sort of behind a keyboard and sometimes an almost, you know, faceless person to a certain extent. Yeah. So how do you cope with it now? So that was obviously now, you know, several years ago.
Yeah.
How do you now cope with it? Because I'm sure you now get criticism today, you know, in terms of different shapes and sizes that appears in your life. What are your coping mechanisms now if someone essentially tries to sort of knock you or the business down? How do you get back up again?
You really have to, I'll generally address things that I think are worthwhile. So I think if it's a, you can often read into the comment, and is the comment because someone doesn't understand what you stand for, or is it because they don't want to, they just want to argue with you? So I think when it's someone who just wants to have an argument with you, then just let it go, just completely ignore it, because nobody is going to gain anything out of that conversation. But if they genuinely are interested in the business or something else, then I'll, you know, how can I help you? What do you need to know? Is there something I'm missing? Or try and fill the gaps for them, because I think that's, you know, I found that if you do address it, it tends to get better. So
and I love that you your previous part of the story, that you actually phoned the lady and had a conversation and confronted it, and I love that. I think it's such a brave thing to do, an incredibly brave thing to do, and I love that. I want to switch back, if I can, to the growth aspect to your story, because what I think is important for me is, so you navigated the extremely high growth after Shark Tank, but I think having known a bit more about your business, there's so much more to your story than just Shark Tank, because what you've now gone on to do is consecutively, you know, year after year, you have now continued beyond Shark Tank story to grow. So I'd love to understand a bit more about beyond Shark Tank, what else do you think has contributed to your growth and making BeFit Food so successful?
It's definitely about bringing on a team that can work with you towards the big goal, the vision, the BHAG. So bringing on that team that can see that vision and help, we're all going in the same direction. And that's the most important thing, that if you've got people in the business not going in the same direction, then you're not going to get there. But if you bring in people that actually believe in what you're doing, so half of my interview and my onboarding process for people on my team is really finding out what they know about BeFit Food, finding out what their beliefs are, and if they're passionate about helping other people. So, you know, I don't care what shape or size any of my staff come in or what they do for their health, as long as they're passionate about helping others and they understand good health and good nutrition, because people that are coming to us want support. And that's something that I think is actually lacking in the whole industry. People are selling things, but they're not giving the clinical advice, the support and the nurturing, because it's such a big step for people to take. So really hiring an amazing team. So whether that's, you know, someone in marketing that can help get your brand message out there the right way. Mm. And that's something, particularly with a product that is, you know, it's meat, vegetables and protein, healthy fat, yet it does result in rapid weight loss. So how do you sell that without it being too conflicting, that it's, you know, it's everything in balance and moderation and portion control, which isn't very sexy and very hard to sell? Or then if you go down the path of rapid weight loss, then you actually scare off a lot of the population that think that rapid weight loss isn't safe, healthy or effective, and they think that it's, you know, bars and shakes and other things. So that's important when it comes to operations. I think making sure that you've got a team that have very specific roles. So you've got people looking after your you know, your deliveries and the orders, and then you've got a team looking after the customer and the customer experience. You've got a team looking after, or a person, it can be by a team, thinking about new leads and sales. And I think what I found over the first couple of years in the business is I was doing a little bit of absolutely everything, but I was forgetting to actually be out there as me and talk about the product too, because the only person that can really sell the product or sell the product really well is the person who absolutely lives and breathes it. And you're the best advocate for your business. I'm the best advocate for my business. And I'm sure there are, you know, there are those unicorns that you can find that can sell your business just like you can. And I know they're out there, but it's just a matter of finding those people and keep searching until you find them, because they will do the same job that you would do. And their drive can't be money, because if the drive is money, then they lose the vision and the purpose. And yeah.
And that's actually something I want to hit on, actually, around vision and purpose, and going back to your previous point around the team being so passionate. You know, I was fortunate enough to have met some of your team, and when I was at your office, it was unreal how genuinely passionate the team were about the business. Several of the team were on the program at the time and comparing notes. So they are truly living, breathing it on the program, talking about it. And just when I had a sort of conversation with them, they were just so passionate about it. So I'm really interested in digging a little bit more into that, into some of the how. So how you get your team so passionately behind your vision, and how you get them then executing upon that vision. Because one of the biggest things that I hear is, oh, yeah, yeah, Abby, I know that, but I can't get my team to do it. Or, yeah, yeah, we know that and we want to do this, but our team just aren't behind it. So I would love to understand a little bit more of that how from you, because I feel you've done that really well with your team.
So I guess that first step is the hiring process and making sure that you're really upfront with people. I don't actually try and oversell a job or even sell a job. I try and talk about all the negatives about the job, because I want someone to want to be here because they want to help, rather than saying, this is how much money, these are all the perks, this is this. I don't do that whatsoever, and I don't tell them that it's going to be this glamorous, glossy, whatever it is. I try and actually break all that down. I go, you know, every Wednesday you'll be in activewear because we're unloading 2 pallets of food in from trucks by hand into our freezers, and you know, you need to bring your own gloves and your freezer jackets, and you know, like, it's show them the bits where we all get together and we're all working as a team. And you will be required, you know, if the phone rings, I don't care what your job description says, you'll be answering the phone if someone else can't within 3 rings, or you'll be in the retail store serving customers if it gets busy, or emptying the bins, or going out and getting toilet paper. Whatever the team needs, we're all in it together. And I think that's what brings a strong team vibe or team feeling. And if everyone feels like they're a part of the team, then you create a culture that's really strong. And that culture, as long as you've hired people that are passionate about helping other people, then they'll help their team members, they'll help the customers, and it will come together. But there needs to be that genuine passion to help others, I think. And I guess going back to sort of the question, you really need to keep engaged with the team and the staff. So we do a WhatsApp. But sometimes, you know, we might do it a couple of times a week. Sometimes it's only once a week, but it's really just being open and honest with the staff. Here's our figures. Here's what's happening. Here's how many customers. Here's our targets. Who's got ideas? And whether it's the person, you know, in the more junior role in the business or the more senior, everyone's ideas are valid, and nobody, I guess everyone's got the same respect within the team. And even a new person may have these amazing ideas that we can follow up and implement on when you've got people with 3 or 4 or 5 years, you know, ahead of them, or more 10 years experience. Sometimes it's the juniors that come through with the really, you know, the nuggets.
I agree with that entirely. And you've had to step up into a leadership role really quickly, actually. You know, you only started in 2015. The Shark Tank story we're talking about is sort of 2017. It's actually a very, very fast growth company and journey. So you've had to really develop into a leader very, very quickly. What do you feel have been some of your sort of key lessons in terms of leadership and that leader that you've had to become to lead such an amazing team that are passionate and behind your vision?
Oh, lots. I think the first one is definitely you just need to lead with your own style and be yourself. So I thought that to be a leader, I might need to be different to who I was. And I was being told by other people I actually did need to lead differently to what I was. And I struggled with that. So every day became really hard for me because I was trying to be something I wasn't. I was trying to lead in a way that wasn't natural for me. And I found that hard work, which I think was harder on my team as well. So I went back to my own leadership style, and I've got when you look at your DISC analysis or any of that sort of personality stuff, get to know who you really are and do as many of those personality assessments, work types, those sort of quizzes, learn about you and learn about your team, and then learn how to work with the team. And I think that's the most important thing. So we did the DISC analysis on our whole team, so I could go, right, I can understand so-and-so operates like this. And so when I communicate quite flippantly about, oh, can you just do this and this, they have a panic attack because they want to have a pen and paper. They want to be taking notes. They want to know what color, they want all the details. So I know when I have a meeting with particular people, there's a format to that meeting. And then when it's other people that, they're happy to just take a throwaway comment, run with that and execute on it. So understanding people's, their work styles, their personalities, and working with them, but being your natural self and leading with your natural leadership style rather than trying to be something else because it's too hard work.
Yeah, it's impossible to keep it up. And I found it the same with sales. When you try and think of what a salesperson should be and you try and be that person, you're just not yourself. It's not authentic, and it just shows through. So I couldn't agree more. So I want to change tact with you, and I want to change to sort of some of your habits and rituals. And I would absolutely consider you someone who operates at a high performance. You know, I follow you on Instagram and see, right, okay, before I've even got out of bed, Kate has been to Pilates. She's dropped the kids at school. She's gone to work and run a multi-million-dollar business. Oh my gosh, she's then on a podcast. She's then here. She's there. That you operate at absolutely a high level. And you have some incredible sort of rituals that I see that you've built in. So I guess the first thing that I'd love to understand about that is how do you navigate that? You are very committed to your exercise. You are very committed to your healthy living and healthy eating. You're committed to your business. You're committed to your children. When all those priorities are conflicting, how do you manage that?
Oh, look, I think the most important thing is understanding that that analogy of you need to fit your own mask before you can fit your child's mask. So if you don't look after you, you can't look after anybody else, and you certainly can't do the job. You can't be the mum you want to be. You learn that the hard way too, because you think, oh, I'll just keep churning out work. I'll forget about me. I'll do my 20-hour days, and you get so busy you hardly eat. You're not drinking water. You're not exercising, and you're not feeling good. But that reset button, I think I always sort of say to people, it's, get started with the easiest thing. Like I would lie in bed going, oh, I don't feel like going for a run or doing exercise today. But then I'll tell myself, what is the easiest thing I could do? And if I'd usually run 10Ks, I'll say, I'm going to run a kilometre. And rather than going outside, I'm going to do it downstairs on the treadmill in my pyjamas. That seems so easy. So I can pull myself out of bed to do that. And sure enough, I'll do that. And then I'll be feeling so good. After about 3 or 4 minutes, I'm like, this feels really good. And then you keep going. And once you reset, then you do some exercise in the morning, you eat better during the day, you're more conscious of how much water you drink, and you're in a better mood because you start the day with these positive endorphins. So you feel like a better mum because you're not yelling at the kids, you've got more patience. And I think it's finding that, I don't believe there's such thing as work-life balance. And people talk about having every aspect of their life in balance, whereas I steal this from Janine Ellis, but she talks about this pendulum. So it's all about work. It's all about family. And then, it's very not often in the middle. So you've got to swing from side to side, because if you don't do that, then you can't be the best you can be at being, in your job, in your business and whatever it is, or the very best mother, parent, partner, family person you can be. So if you can't be the best of both at the same time. So it is that swing between. Otherwise, if you sit in the middle, then you're doing both half-assed. And that's a problem as well. And I think a lot of people talk about finding balance, but balance isn't what I strive for, because balance to me is doing everything not well.
Yeah.
You know, doing everything at 50% or at 1%, because you've got all these 1%ers in your life. So why not focus on one thing, do that well, and then give time to something else and do that well.
And how do you, so when you're making that decision, what for you are your absolute non-negotiables? So you've got a week where you're getting smashed, you're flying here, there, everywhere, the business is on fire, everything's going on. If you only have a really, really short amount of time, so you could either, you know, go to the gym or have a healthy meal or whatever it might be, what for you are the non-negotiables?
Okay, so my absolute minimums would be I always try and do Pilates at least once a week, even just once a week, because I find that's actually good for my back health. Now that I sit in an office a lot more, I'm not sitting all day, but I do sit a lot more than what I used to. And I think if I don't do the Pilates, I actually get, you know, I feel uncomfortable in my posture. So I think that's really important. And I push to get there, because if I start feeling sore, it's actually a bit too late. I always get out for a run outside, whether it's in rain, hail or shine, whether it's a road run, beach run, track run, whatever it is. And if I travel, I'll always pack my runners. Even if I've got carry-on luggage, I've still learned how to, you know, manage to fit something to exercise in, even if they're the clothes that go underneath my dress for the day. But that's, you know, that I find that that's really important, just getting the fresh air and going for a walk or a run. Other than that, I love to have a massage. That's my absolute treat to myself. It wouldn't be every week, but I would definitely do it more than once a month. And some months it might be, you know, 3 1-hour massages. Other months it might literally be 1 5-minute massage when you're sitting in the chair and it costs you $5. But I would take that 5 minutes and that's enough. Like the reset for me only has to be tiny things. It's not the, you know, the full experience, which would be delightful, but that just doesn't happen these days. But something's better than nothing. And even little things like I love to go out and get a green smoothie. That's, I just love that sort of thing. So I'll go out, if it's not once a week or whenever it is, I'll just drive somewhere and go and buy a green smoothie and sit and enjoy it, because that's, it makes me feel good and I love the taste of it. And there's those tiny little things that are important to me. And then I think my ritual every night when I'm not traveling and at home is to jump in bed with the kids. So, you know, lay in each of their beds and talk to them. And the things they say when they're going to bed are, you know, they ask all the questions that you don't have the answers to, and it gets you really thinking. And for me, that's something that, you know, it's, I think, what do I wish that someone told me when I was that age as well, you know? So I'm very careful in my answers. Like they always ask all those questions, like, what if you weren't here, mummy? And what if something happened? And I, you know, I always tell them, I'm in your heart. Remember, you came from me, so I'm in your heart, so I'll never be gone. And, you know, that sort of stuff. And that's what I guess keeps me feeling like I've got that relationship with the kids, and you have those deep conversations. And there's studies that show that spending something like 4 minutes of uninterrupted time with your children is far more important every day than spending 8 hours with them when you've got your back to them, doing the dishes and doing the washing and being busy. It's actually about that important one-on-one, completely dedicated time, no technology, no phones, no one yelling at the background, just that one-on-one time. So that's really important to me.
I think what I love, what I've sort of, I feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've sort of pulled out from some of this. I was really curious before this chat around, well, how do you build up habits? How do you stick to be disciplined when you feel like rolling over and snoozing the alarm? You know, how do you do that? And what's interesting about your answers there, I feel a theme throughout, whether it's exercise, whether it's food, whether it's your children, is actually that start small and something's better than nothing, and having, you know, that 5 minutes dedicated to your children, that five minutes on the treadmill in your pajamas, which is quite the visual. do you think that's one of the keys to your success, is actually that you've built up the discipline and the habits and the rituals by just starting small?
I think it's something I've, in my life, now that you point that out, that I always say something's better than nothing to the kids, to everyone. And it might be when you think, I don't have time for a phone call right now, but I do have 90 seconds. You know what? I'm just going to put call this person, say happy birthday, and, you know, apologize that I'm running late, apologize that I've got a meeting coming up, but I just wanted to say happy birthday. And that person, they understand, and you got it done. So to me, something is better than nothing, rather than going, I was just too busy, I just didn't get to contact you, or this or that. You know what? Tell them you're busy, but at least still do it. Call, because they can't read your mind. So that is, I'm a big believer in that. And I do find that I'm always doing multiple things, but if you don't get things started, then you don't follow through with anything. So getting things started is really important. And then there's always time, you know, I calendar time for deep thinking or deep work time. So in my calendar, I block periods where I can just sit and focus without meetings. And every now and then they do get booked over, but I know there is calendar time in there. So if I've got 5 minutes, I will start something, because I know Tuesday afternoon I'm going to have time to go back to that. And
I'm a massive fan of that Tony Robbins quote, which I'm probably going to butcher, around the just take that first step, just start. And I find that really powerful. And that seems to be what you're using. So look, I would love to go into a quick fire round with you with a few questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, no problems.
First one, and this one was from me. Do you ever snooze your alarm?
I do. I set two alarms just in case I snooze the first one. So if it's a morning that I'm getting up and exercising, the first one is at 5:06, the second one is 5:13. So I let myself sleep into the second one if I don't feel like getting up. But the second one's non-negotiable.
I feel so good about that you snooze your alarm. You've made my day. The next one was a question actually that got asked on social media. So I put out on social media, what questions do you have for Kay? And this one came in, which was, what's your biggest learning from having Janine Alice as a mentor and investor?
Oh, okay. Well, it's a mentor, from what I thought it was and what it actually is quite different. And as an investor as well. So I literally thought that by going on Shark Tank, I'd walk out with a check and she would fix the business. And I since learned actually having a mentor is about knowing the questions to ask and getting the support that you need. And it's advice, but it's not, Janine will never say to me, I know how to fix this, do this. She'll actually say, she'll ask more questions and then she'll make you think of the answer basically, or it has to be your response, because otherwise you can't implement someone else's thoughts. You know what I mean? So it's really about having someone who has experience. They draw upon their experience and they don't push their experience onto you, because otherwise if it was that simple and there was one answer for everything, then everyone would be doing it. So having an open mind that there's never going to be one answer. There's so many ways to do things, and you need someone who challenges you and challenges your way of thinking and is constantly questioning you. And then you're saving up some questions to ask someone else, not expecting a direct response, but something else to learn. And I must say, every time I have a mentoring session with Janine, I come away with so much work to do, because there's so many things I haven't explored and different ways of looking at things.
I love that. That's amazing. And which book has had the biggest impact on you that you have read? I know you're a keen reader in amongst everything else. What is your favorite?
Oh, recently I've read a couple of really good ones. You sent me the thank you book, and oh my goodness, that was life changing. I absolutely loved that. I'm actually meeting Daniel Flynn soon. I just thought he was such an inspiration, and that whole just do it and get out there. And Janine says this to me as well, like, don't always ask for permission, ask for forgiveness. If, you know, have a go at things, and not everyone knows the answers to everything, so you don't know unless you try. And so I love that book. Shoes of Prey, I cried. That was such a sad book. I cried my eyes out in that, and I really loved it, because, you know, you're going on the journey with someone who's done everything they can to help their business survive. And at some point, things don't always work out, and that's okay too. Eat That Frog. That's an incredible book, and that's really, I love this analogy, and whether this is the words in the book, but this is the way that I retell it, is if you've got this, you know, this pond full of frogs that you've got to look at every morning, you've got to eat them all. Find the biggest, lumpiest, blackest, toad in the pond and eat that first. And then all the other ones, you know, it's easy. You just pop them in. So I loved that book. And The One Thing. And so the one thing really that, you know, what is that vision, that focus, and just work all of your energy towards that, and don't let your energy go in the wrong directions. Just put your energy in the right direction. And it also has that analogy of ticking off the most important things, that you might have a to-do list of 20 things to do, but what is the one thing that if you did that today, that would change tomorrow? You would feel satisfied even if you left the other 19 things on the list. So I love that too.
Yeah, I like that book. That's one of my favorites. They've got a good podcast as well.
Ah.
So starting to come to a close, what I want to understand now is what's the future for Be Fit Food? What's next? You guys have been on such an epic journey. And, you know, what do the next few years hold? Where are you heading?
So, yeah, we've recently gone into some supermarkets, and that's really exciting for us being in the retail space. And I would expect that we probably keep expanding there as well. But for me, it's really about finding other ways to deliver the education and the nutrition support too. So I think anyone can Google and look for answers to their nutrition questions. But how do you actually support someone on their journey? How do you give them the right information to get started? But once they are on that journey, how do you cut through all the bullshit that's out there and the stuff in the media that perhaps isn't true? So it's really about Be Fit Food is going to be this hub of information and support, and making sure that our customers or anyone who's, you know, interested in Be Fit Food is getting the right information to help them on their journey. Even if they're not using our product, that's not what we're about. We're about helping Australians eat themselves better and any way that they can. And, you know, we've structured our meal program so that people hopefully only need to do it for, you know, 1 to 6, 10 weeks, and generally it's only 1 to 2 weeks, and that's usually enough for people to really get started, that instant gratification when they lose that first 5 kilos, and then they go, hey, I know what my problem is. In hindsight, I was eating too much. I ate your meals and now I'm full on these really small portions. So they adjust their appetite, they adjust their taste buds, so they no longer want the sweet or salty food. They're happier with the, you know, the herbs and spices and the plain veg and the, you know, the fresher foods. And I think, yeah, for us, it's really about creating a health hub and a place where people can go for trusted information and support from our team.
And you guys are incredible at that. I will say, when I first met Kay, I had just not that long ago had my baby was trying to lose the last of my baby weight. Met Kay and was like, okay, I've got to give this a go. I found it incredibly hard to follow the program because I'd been in such bad eating habits, particularly whilst I was pregnant. I'd got into some really, really bad habits. But what I actually felt I got from the program wasn't just the weight loss and helping me shift that stubborn bit of sort of losing the baby weight, but actually it was that education piece, because for me, I remember being surprised by some of the portion sizes. And also it made me start to question more what was in some of the food. And I consider myself, you know, relatively well educated and you know, relatively knowledgeable, and I found myself much more questioning what I was eating, questioning what was in stuff, and actually I found that there was a whole new education process for me, that I was like, wow, some of this stuff that's got a 5-star rating on it and I perceive is healthy, or it says the word natural on it, it really isn't. So I do love that about Be Fit Food, that you're very generous around the education, and as part of the program you're also not only losing the weight but you're learning as you go.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because that is what we stand for. And it's like I said, we're not doing it for the money. It's not about the transaction. It's actually about the results and how someone feels through that journey too, because there's no point losing weight if you don't feel amazing losing that weight. You're better off not to lose the weight. Like, how can you be the best you? When do you feel the best? And that's, you know, that's what I'd like to share with people. Like, I wake up most days and I feel amazing, and I don't do anything particularly special. I want other people to feel good.
Yeah. And I loved the fact that it's not just around, because I'm looking at it again at the moment, because I feel where I'm getting busier and busier, I can get in and get home late, and then that's where you're going to be short of time and make a bad choice. And I look at it as well, I'm studying a lot around high performance, peak performance, what is it? And so much of that behind it is the eating and the nutrition and those sorts of choices that we're making.
Yeah.
So for me, it's also looking at it from a high performance perspective. I feel like to be at the top of my game, I don't have a choice now but to eat well and to look after myself and you know, not be off sick and all those things. And therefore having a convenient meal on hand that isn't full of crap is also actually part of it. So to me, it's also so much more than just, you know, the rapid weight loss where it first started.
Yeah, absolutely. And that comes to something else. I'll give you my biggest tip. So if you so get your food right, because that'll obviously support your brain health as well. And I guess you fight those free radicals and all of that sort of stuff. But the other thing is just getting in a small amount of some sort of exercise that is strenuous enough that it actually changes your brain. So we've got this chemical produced by our brain, BDNF, or brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And exercise has the capability to make us secrete this chemical that makes us grow new brain cells. So that's really important for high performance. So that's part of the motivation with the exercise is, for me, I'm like, okay, well, if I'm not exercising, I can't be high performing at work, because your brain cells, you grow more brain cells when you exercise. You've got to do something, and that 5 minutes to me is enough. I feel recharged, and particularly for stress and anxiety and all of that, even a 5 minute run is enough for me to go, the weight's off my shoulders, nothing's a problem anymore.
Yep. And I found since becoming a mum, I've had to change my mindset with that. Whereas before I'd go, okay, unless I've got an hour, it's not even worth going to the gym. Yeah. Now it's like, woohoo, I've got 5 minutes. Let's go.
Yes. Yep. Let's do 10 squats and 10 push-ups and we're done.
And that's it. So Kate, if people want to connect with you, or they want to check out BeFit Food, or they want to look at BeFit Food options, how can people connect with you, or how can people also connect with BeFit Food and get started there too?
I'd love people to follow our Instagram and Facebook pages, and we've actually got a BeFit Foodies private group that you can join, and we'll accept you. But there's over 4,000 people in that group that are raving fans, and they have the answers to every BeFit Food weight loss question imaginable. There's so many ambassadors in that group that, you know, they're self-appointed. We didn't put them there, and they talk amongst each other, and it's so inspiring to hear what they're saying. They're tips, their tricks and their advice. They're so well researched. Other than that, then jump on the website, befitfood.com.au. Follow me at Kate Save. You'll cop some photos of my family.
I'll put them in the show notes.
Pieces in there, but you know, it's mostly professional stuff, not always.
I like seeing pictures of your girls. Keep it coming.
Thank you.
Well, Kate, thank you. I have got so much out of this. I have really, really, really enjoyed it. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me, and good luck with the podcast.
Before you leave us, don't forget to check out the Execution Zone Summit on the 27th of February in Sydney. We're going to have the incredible Jacinta McDonald, co-founder of Anytime Fitness, talking to us about how they disrupted the fitness industry, how they took it from zero to over 500 clubs, her tips for success, and all the behind the scenes of her story. We're then going to have the amazing Julie Masters, CEO of Influence Nation, take us through her Influencer Code workshop. This is about how do you become influential in your industry in a digital age, and what do you need to do to stand out from the crowd in such a noisy space. This workshop is just going to be absolutely brilliant. Julie just is an incredibly inspiring lady who walks her talk and has years of experience that she brings to the table on this topic. Beyond that, we're then going to be doing activities to start putting your learning into action. We don't want you walking away feeling inspired. We want you walking away having taken the first steps to execution. Get your tickets now on www.theexecutionzone.com.